8. When did that case arrive?
If you... Board staff received this complaint on January 24th of
2019. And how did, what was that complaint? How, what did, I'm sorry, what did the complaint consist of?
That complaint was received from a staff member of Ms. Michelle Johnson. She sent Mr. Douglas Parlin an email regarding Triton Alarm.
Okay. Would you look at Exhibit 5, which is base number 01. You have the evidence packet, do you not?
Yes, ma'am. I have it in front of me.
Okay, please look at base number 017, which is page 136 in the board packet.
Okay, I'm there.
And what is this document?
This is an email from Ms. Johnson to Mr. Parlin notifying him that Triton Alarm Company, identified by registration number 21495, is currently practicing with a closed license. Ms. Johnson indicated that the controlling person was Mr. Weidman, she also wrote that the check received for the application was returned as an NSF.
Okay. Let me just catch up for a second. I would move that Exhibit 5 be admitted in evidence.
Okay, thank you. Exhibit 5 is admitted as evidence. Mr. Stevens?
And, well, you know, Chairman, I hate to interrupt.
Yeah.
But you really need to ask Mr. Stevens if he has an objection before you submit it.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Ray. I'm having a little connectivity problems over here, but yes, we should. Once the state offers the exhibit, then Mr. Stevens is given an opportunity to respond to it, and then the board makes their decisions on admissibility. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Stevens, do you have any objections to Exhibit 5?
Yes, I do. Triton Alarm was not active in Arizona in January of 2019. And the company was sold actually in like late December. It didn't go into effect. The Wisconsin Department of Financial Institution has record that the Triton Alarm is under another individual as of January of 2019. So I object to that exhibit.
Okay,
in response to Mr. Stevens' objection, I would say that Exhibit 5 counteracts what he just said, and that it's not an appropriate objection.
Okay, so the objection will be overruled then, and Exhibit 5 will be accepted as evidence.
What happened to that particular staff complaint, Ms. Correll?
I'm sorry, what was your question?
What happened to that staff complaint that was made on January 24th
in 008? So from the staff complaint, Mr. Parlin assigned this case to investigations on February 4th, 2019.
Who did he assign it to?
He assigned this to Mr. Will.
And then what did Mr. Will do?
Mr. Will sent out a notice of investigation on February 4th to Joshua Weidman.
And would you look at Exhibit 6, which is base number 019, and it's page 138 in the board packet?
Yes, I have that in front of me.
And do you know what that is?
Yes, this is the notice of investigation that was sent out by Investigator Will.
I would ask that exhibit. Is it a true and correct copy of the notice?
Yes, it is.
I would ask that Exhibit 6 be admitted into evidence.
Okay, Mr. Stevens, do you have any objections to Exhibit 6?
Yes, because I did not own that company at that time. I was no longer on the board of that company, therefore I did not receive the notification for this alleged violation.
But that may be testimony regarding that exhibit, but it doesn't affect the admissibility of the exhibit.
Okay. The board's going to accept Exhibit 6 as evidence. Mr. Stevens' objections noted.
Ms. Correll, did Mr. Will receive a response to that notice?
No, he did not.
Okay, and then what happened? I'm sorry? Did you say something?
No, I didn't.
Okay. What happened on February 11th of that same year?
February 11th, board staff received an additional complaint, AL-19-010, regarding respondent and Triton Alarms.
Would you look at Exhibit 7, which is base number 022, and it's in the board packet, page 141?
Yes, I have that in front of me.
And what is this exactly?
This is an anonymous complaint that looks like it was submitted through the website. This complaint alleges that Mr. Stevens knocked on a door in Mesa and pretended to work for a security system identified as ADT.
Is this a true and correct copy of the email received by the board?
Yes, it is.
I would ask that Exhibit 7 be admitted into evidence.
Thank you, Ms. Ray. Mr. Stevens, any objections?
Yes, I would like to object to that based on it's false. And there was no proof that I ever knocked on a door. And when I did work in the industry, I did not knock on doors.
This goes beyond an objection. This is testimony at this time, and this is Ms. Baskin. We need a legal objection.
Oh, my goodness. Based on that allegation, there's no proof, there's no nothing. No, I completely object to that.
Okay, so noted.
Also, the complainer was anonymous. It didn't state their name or, you know, there's no credibility of the complainer. So, no, that's, they
okay.
can't, I object.
Thank you.
Okay, Chairman, this is Jeannie Ray. I'm assuming that his objection goes to hear that it's a hearsay document. I agree that it's a hearsay document, but there's nothing to indicate that it's not reliable. It may affect the weight of the exhibit, but it does not affect the admissibility.
Okay. Thank you. The board will accept Exhibit 7 as evidence. Thank you.
Now, Ms. Correll, that person who filled out this email, there's a section that says comments in it. Who did that come from, those comments?
I'm sorry. Can you clarify your question?
Look at the email, Exhibit 7, and in it says comment, colon, correct?
Yes.
Where do those comments come from?
To the best of my knowledge, those comments are completed by the complainant.
They're not completed by BTR, by the board staff, are they?
No, they're not.
And what does it say there?
It says, individual Travis Stevens, DBA Triton Alarm, is operating an alarm business without a license. His website. And then it lists the website as TritonAlarm.com.
Okay, and then whoever it is goes on to say, he knocked on my door, et cetera, correct?
That's correct.
What happened to this case, 19010?
So this case received a notice of investigation sent from Mr. Will on March 5th, 2019.
I'm sorry, let me interrupt you. It was assigned to Mr. Will.
It was assigned to Mr. Correct. Will. He sent the notice on March 5th, 2019, and the notice went unanswered.
Okay, let's look at Exhibit 8, which is base number 024 and page 143 in the board packet.
Yes, I have that in front of me.
Okay, what is it?
This is the notice
that was sent. Go ahead.
This is the notice of investigation that was sent to Travis Stevens and Triton Alarm on March 5th, 2019.
Is it a true and correct copy of the notice?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I move that Exhibit 8 be admitted into evidence.
Mr. Stevens, do you have any objections to Exhibit 8?
I do not.
Okay, Exhibit 8 is therefore accepted as evidence. Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Correll, can you explain why Mr. Will switched the notices from Joshua Weidman to Mr. Stevens?
There were several indications that Mr. Stevens was the controlling person of Triton Alarm. There was a website that Mr. Will uncovered that was included in the evidence packet that listed Travis Stevens. It listed Travis at TritonAlarms.com, and it also listed the potential registration number that was assigned to him in 2018 of 21495. So based on that information, Mr. Will determined that Mr. Stevens was the controlling agent.
Okay, so it sounds like Mr. Will started an investigation of this particular situation, correct?
Correct.
All right, did he get an answer to Exhibit 8, which was the notice to Mr. Stevens?
No, he did not.
Do you know what else he did to investigate this situation?
He did.
That he looked at the website. What else did he do?
Mr. Will reached out to Triton Alarm via phone and it looks like also Facebook Messenger.
So how did he come up with the Facebook Messenger information?
Mr. Will reached out to Triton Alarm via Facebook and attempted to purchase an alarm from them.
Then what did he do?
Then he spoke with someone identified as Sebastian from Triton Alarm, and then he also spoke with Travis Stevens from Triton Alarm.
Did Mr. Will have an opinion whether or not Sebastian and Travis Stevens were two different people?
It was Mr. Will's opinion that Sebastian and Mr. Stevens were the same person.
Based on what?
Based on the phone number that they were both contacted on. Mr. Will contacted Sebastian on phone number 480-881-2724 and immediately afterwards also contacted Mr. Stevens at the same number.
Would you check that number? Is it 2724 or 4724?
I have 2724.
Okay, let's see. All right. Would you look, did Mr. Stevens, when he contacted Sebastian and or Travis, did Mr. Will, I'm sorry, treat that as a direct investigation, or how did he deal with that? Let me rephrase my question. Was it a sting?
Mr. Will attempted to purchase an alarm from Triton Alarm. I believe it
was.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Will was posing I'm sorry, let me finish. Mr. Will was posing as a potential customer?
Yes, that's correct.
And what did, what was he told?
He was told that, well, Mr. Will informed Triton Alarm that he was located in Arizona, and Triton Alarm informed him that the typical cost is $30 to $50 a month, which includes cameras, and Mr. Will asked if they install wire or cut walls and what additional information they needed. And Triton Alarm asked Mr. Will to send them a text and provided the phone number of 480-881-2724 to contact.
Does that number match the number for Triton Alarm?
Yes, it does.
Is it the same number that Mr. Stevens was on?
Yes, it is.
Okay, you said that Mr. Will used Facebook Messenger, is that correct?
That's correct.
Did you look at Exhibit 9? And that's base number 027 and page 146 in the board packet.
Yes, I have that in front of me.
What is that?
This is the Facebook message exchange between Mr. Will and Triton Alarm.
Mm-hmm. And which, okay, let me be clear about this. There's a text in blue and then there's regular text, correct?
That's correct.
Which part of that is Mr. Will's text?
The text in blue would be Mr. Will.
Okay. Is this a true and correct copy of the chat messages between Mr. Will and supposedly Sebastian?
Yes, it is.
Now, you note in that, okay, is it okay? I move that Exhibit 9 be admitted in evidence.
Okay, Mr. Stevens, do you have any objection to Exhibit 9?
Yes, because I was not involved in the conversation between myself and Will. I believe he was speaking to somebody else there at the company, so therefore I object.
Okay, but it was Mr. When you talked to Mr. Will, did you receive these chat messages at the same time?
Who are you referring to?
I'm sorry. I did not address the objection. Because we've established that Sebastian and Mr. Stevens are probably the same person, and because the number matches the same number for Mr. Stevens, I think the objection is not well taken.
I object to that because there's no proof of that. I mean, if that's the case, you could say that I'm Joshua Weidman as well. You know, you could say I'm Donald Trump. I mean, you just don't know. There's no proof. So therefore, based on lack of evidence, I object.
And Mr. Chairperson, this is Nana Baskin. I believe that would go to the weight of the evidence that the board wants to afford the evidence.
So you can
it wouldn't turn on its admissibility.
What was the source of this? This came to the board? This email? This exchange?
Yes. So this was a Facebook exchange between Triton Alarms and Mr. Will during the course of his investigation. So this particular exchange identifies the person that Mr. Will is trading messages with as Sebastian. However, this Sebastian also asked Mr. Will to call him at 480-881-2724, which is a number previously identified as belonging to Travis Stevens.
Is there any notes for Mr. Will that he recognized who he was talking to?
So I spoke with Mr. Will while I was preparing for this hearing. And Mr. Will stated that there were two audio recordings that also led him to believe that Sebastian and Mr. Stevens were the same person. Mr. Will called Sebastian based off of this Facebook message request asking Mr. Will to call that number and spoke with Sebastian. After hanging up with Sebastian, Mr. Will called that number again and spoke with Travis Stevens.
On the face
Mr. Chair, but I think that the point here, sorry, this is Alejandro Angel, is we need to evaluate how much weight we want to give to this exhibit, but it doesn't, what's being questioned is not the admissibility, I don't believe, by Mr. Stevens. I don't know why it wouldn't be admissible whether that this conversation happened, whether it was Sebastian or Travis, or whether it's the same person or not, a different issue. Thanks.
Well, I think we can all
accept it. This is Jeannie Ray. It does establish that this was a conversation with Triton Alarm, which is, Triton Alarm is also under, a charge in this case. So it is relevant.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. It seems apparent that the discussion Mr. Stevens may object to the fact that he is Sebastian, but it's clear the discussions were between Triton Alarm and Mr. Will. So I think the board will accept this as evidence, and Mr. Stevens, you can object to this later.
Okay. Well, I guess are we going to do a break here soon? Because there's quite a bit to cover here. Can we continue this another day? Just because I have other commitments, and this court hearing was supposed to start at 9:30, and it's 13.
No, so, I think we need to get this resolved. I think we're going to continue. The state.
Okay, because I actually have to leave here at about 12:30, and I don't have a choice. And so, based on the fact that I don't have representation right now, I'm going to have to leave. So,
this is Dee Ray. I would submit that if Mr. Stevens leaves, he leaves voluntarily, and the hearing should proceed in his absence.
And I have to agree with that. Mr. Stevens, I hope you can stay on. It's your privilege too.
I mean, I really would love to just be able to tell the state whatever the hell I want to, but based on the fact that I am incarcerated, I don't have that ability. I would love to stay on the call, but at 12:30, I have to leave. I don't think me or anybody else here anticipated this call going on this long. I think that's reasonable. Anybody can agree with that.
Yeah.
Well, it might be helpful. Mr. Chairman, it might be helpful to know why he has to leave.
Mr. Stevens?
What's that?
Are you leaving to go to another meeting? What's the length of your departure?
Okay, well, the prison goes on a lockdown at 12:30, and regardless of a legal call or not, I have to participate in that. So.
And how long does that lockdown last?
Usually about 30 minutes.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is Jeannie, and I do not object to recessing the hearing until 1:15, if that's what you want to do, and that's having true. Mr. Stevens come back on the line.
That would work for me.
But, Mr. Chair, I would kindly ask Ms. Ray to also expedite the proceedings because we are going to have forum issues. I personally have to leave at 1:30.
Well, I'm doing the best I can.
I know.
I mean, maybe you do want to recess this to another day.
This is Clarence McCall, so I have to leave at 1 o'clock.
Given all the is there a natural breaking point when we've included everything and could pause for another date?
I'm sorry, I did not get any of that.
I think, Ms. Ray, I think there was a discussion about maybe extending this to another day.
That'd be fine.
I wondered if there was a natural pause in the proceedings legally, that would be a good spot for us to pause and then just pick it up another day.
Ms. Ray, how much more time do you need for the state?
Pardon?
You have another witness after this?
No.
We've got 14 minutes before Mr. Stevens has to be in lockdown.
Maybe this.
Well,
we have 14 more exhibits.
It's up to you. I'll do what you ask me to do.
I say we see how far we can get by 12:30 and then reschedule for another day on this hearing. We also have other business to attend. It's my suggestion.
Right.
Here.
Okay.
May I ask how much time Mr. Stevens needs to get to lockdown?
I would need about 5 minutes, but we probably need to end it by 12:25.
All right.
I appreciate that.
Okay, let me continue then.
Please.
All right, Ms. Correll, you said that Mr. Will talked to a person by the name of Sebastian. He called the same number back, and then the person was identified as Travis Stevens. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And he recognized the voices as being the same?
Yes, that's correct.
Did he indicate where he wanted the alarm installed?
He indicated in his Facebook message that he wanted the alarm installed in Glendale, Arizona.
Okay. There were two recordings of these conversations. They're Exhibit 10 and Exhibit 11. Did you listen to them?
Yes, I did.
And did you confirm with Mr. Will that they existed and that they are true and correct copies of the recordings?
Yes, I did, and yes, he did.
I move that Exhibit 10 and Exhibit 11 be admitted in evidence, and I'm not going to play them. They were provided to you earlier for your listening enjoyment.
Right. Yeah, we did get those. Mr. Stevens, do you have any objections to these audio recordings
admitted? Yes, I do, because I believe the conversation between Will and myself, I did let him know that we are not operating in Arizona and we are a referral business. I did state that on record. It is recorded. I did let him know that if he would like an alarm, I could refer him to a licensed alarm business and they would send somebody out to the home. That was what was said in the recording, and therefore I object to that exhibit.
Okay.
So the recording for themselves, Chairman? And that doesn't go to the admissibility.
I'm sorry, I missed the question, Ms. Ray.
I said the recording speaks for itself. You can evaluate it as you wish to evaluate it, but his objection doesn't go to admissibility.
Okay, thank you. So the board will accept Exhibits 10 and 11 as evidence, and Mr. Steve, you can file your objection later.
Okay.
Okay, 12:20. Sorry, Ms. Ray, you want to continue?
Yes. Ms. Correll, did Mr. Will and Travis Stevens engage in a series of email conversations?
Yes, they did.
Would you look at Exhibit 12, please? That's base number 034, page 153 in the board packet.
Yes, I have that in front of me.
Would you look through that and make sure that that's a true and correct copy of those email conversations?
Yes, it is.
I would move that Exhibit 12 be admitted in evidence.
Thank you. Mr. Stevens, any objections to Exhibit 12?
No objection.
Thank you. Exhibit 12 is admitted as evidence then.
In looking at Exhibit 12, is there any indication that Mr. Stevens is affiliated with Triton Alarm?
Yes. So the email address that Mr. Stevens emailed Mr. Wilfrum is travis@tritonalarm.com. Additionally, I would point out that the phone number that Travis Stevens adds in his signature is the 480-881-2724 number that Mr. Will was instructed to call in the Facebook message.
Okay. Did, at some point in that email communication, did Mr. Travis say something about his company was filing bankruptcy and that Mr. Will should talk to his attorney? Did you hear my question?
I did. Yes. In that same email string, Mr. Stevens reported that Triton Alarm was filing for bankruptcy and provided attorney information to Mr. Will.
And what page is that? What page is that?
It looks like it is 041 in the evidence packet.
Okay. And did Mr. Will do that?
Yes, Mr. Will contacted the attorney.
And what happened?
The attorney stated that he was not representing Mr. Stevens or Triton Alarm regarding any complaints filed with the board.
Okay. I think, Mr. Chairman, this would be a good place to break.
Okay. So, the state, is it the same rest as case with this one?
No, I'm not resting my case. I'm just asking for a recess.
Okay. Very good. All right. Do we need a vote?
Mona, do we need a vote for them to recess?
Okay.
I don't think we need a vote. I think, I mean, you can if you want. I just have a point of order question. Ms. Ray, did you admit Exhibit 13? I couldn't. Was there...
I haven't gotten to Exhibit 13.
Okay, all right, so we ended at 12 and those have all been admitted. Okay, thank you. The board could vote and take a recess at this time to grant Mr. Stevens the opportunity to fill his obligations in prison and to continue it at for the next board meeting.
Okay. Can we do a quick vote?
Mr. Chairman, this is Deanie Ray. I do suggest that it is possible that you could set a special meeting for this.
Yeah, let's talk to the board about that. I think I will probably favor the next board hearing next month.
Mr. Chair, but I think order to notice implications if we set a special meeting and everything else. Isn't having Mr. Stevens here right now the best way to confirm that we can do it at the next board meeting?
What's the date?
The 27th of October.
Mr. Stevens, would you be available on October the 27th?
Yes, I would.
Yeah.
9:30?
Yeah.
9:30, all right. So we'll go ahead and recess this disciplinary action for now and put it on our agenda for October the 27th at 9:30.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens. Thank you, Ms. Ray and Ms. Baskin.
Thank you all. Bye-bye.
We may want a break.
I think we need
briefly.
A break. Let's do 15 minutes. And be
thank you, Chair.
Here at, 12:40?
We are now recording. Do you want to do a quorum?
Yeah, we should vote make official.
Okay. Please say aye if you're here. Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Alejandro.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Here.
Neil Jones.
Here.
Clarence McAllister.
Here.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Here.
Stephen Knoll.
Here.
Andrew Everode.
Here.
Still in a quorum.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move that we consent items 6A, 6, 7, 8, and 9 for dismissal or closure.
Okay, we have a motion to accept staff recommendation for dismissal on item 6A, 6, 7, 8, 9. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Can I offer a comment?
Yes. Who's present?
This is Jacob Vinton, the complainant in case 6A6.
Ah, okay.
I believe the respondent was also.
There's a number.
Just so the respondent is Richard Frost.
Just for the record, too, I understand that the quorum will cease at 2 p.m. Just so everyone's aware to probably try to be as succinct as possible.
We'll come back to 6A6. Let's complete 7, 8, 9 now.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to modify my motion and move to dismiss 6A, 7, 8, and 9, dismissal and closure.
Okay, there's a motion to dismiss 6A, 7, 8, 9. Is there a second?
Second.
This is Andy. Second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Kurt, will you do the vote?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Let's move on to 6A6.
Can we get rid of a couple of these other ones first?
Okay.
Yeah, come back to that. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that we consent item 6B1, proposed letter of resolution by letter of concern for case 20P20-042.
Okay, we have a motion for resolution by letter of concern. Is there a second?
Carmen.
Mr. Chair, I will second with the caveat that I do know Kathy Mills, okay. But I am impartial and don't know any particulars about this case outside of the board packet.
All right, thank you. So we have a motion to accept the resolution for letter of concern for P20042. Kirk, do you do a vote?
Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Motion carried?
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move that we consent items 6C1 and 2, complaints proposed for resolution with signed consent agreements.
Okay, we have a motion to accept the signed consent agreements for P20036 and H121-011. Is there a second?
001.
Thanks.
I'll second it, Steve.
Thank you. Kurt?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Motion's carried.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that we consent item 61, compliance and monitor investigation, accept the staff's recommendation to grant the respondent a request for early termination of probation.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jones. Can I get a second on P190121?
Alejandro.
Thank you. Kurt, can we do a vote?
Let's see. Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye. Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Okay, let's move on to item 6A6. This is the synopsis for this complaint is on May the 5th, 2020. The board received a complaint alleging that the respondent failed to apply the appropriate knowledge and skill while providing professional services as an engineer on the above named project, which is at 1678 Oaklawn Drive in Prescott, Arizona. The structure was a renovation at the Prescott Eye Care Adult Daycare Facility in Prescott. The investigative conclusions. This investigation concludes that the respondent has not violated Board Statute ARS 32-124-C4 as it relates to AAC R4-30-3016, and that respondent has not failed to apply the appropriate technical knowledge and skill while providing professional services on the structure renovation at Prescott Eye Care Adult Daycare Adult Day Center at 213 North Marina Street in Prescott, Arizona. Okay, I think we have the respondent online. Would you like to share your position?
I believe the alleger and the respondent.
Oh, we got them both?
Yes, we do.
Okay, let's...
Jacob Vinton is the alleger. Let him go first.
Yeah. What's his name, Mr. Vinton?
Vinton.
Mr. Vinton, are you online? Can you identify yourself, please, and share your position on this case?
Yes, this is Jacob Vinton. I believe that the board needs to do a more thorough investigation. I received the schedule for this meeting. I noticed that this was here for dismissal or closure. This building is next to the building that I work in, and so I drive, I go by it every day to and from work. I was concerned at the front wall and its attachment to the roof diaphragm. This morning, to prepare for this meeting, I got to the office a little before 8, and I ran some calculations. And in detail 101, the ledger for in-plane diaphragm loads, detail 101 specifies 10 D nails at 6 inches on center and existing 1x sheathing. This is not an approved diaphragm in the NDS code. For this type of 1x sheathing, the NDS requires 3 8D common nails at each board for a 1x6 and 4 8D common nails for each board at a 1x8. In either case, that works out to about a nail every 2 inches nominally. Per NDS table 12N, in this configuration, a 10D nail is good for 105 pounds and an 8D nail is good for 90 pounds. So instead of the 270 pounds of attachment, we have 105 pounds of attachment, or 39% of the expected attachment. In table 4.2D, the NDS provides an allowable seismic load for this diaphragm of 50 pounds per lintel foot and an allowable wind load for this diaphragm of 70 pounds per foot. The lateral analysis page of the calculations shows the width of the building at 50 feet. We subtract 8 inches on each side for the existing masonry walls. That gives us a diaphragm width of 48.67 feet. Per shear line 1 of the calculations, there will be 4,302 pounds of seismic load at this line and 6,696 pounds of wind load at this line. That is 88 pounds per lineal foot of seismic load and 138 pounds per lineal foot of wind load. That means the diaphragm would be 197% stressed under wind loads. However, if we only have 39% of the expected attachment, the diaphragm would be 505% stressed under wind loads. The next thing I checked was the attachment of the ledger to the diaphragm for out-of-plane loads. I was surprised to see that the ledger was used to resist out-of-plane loads because that induces cross-grain bending. and which then will also incur cross-grain tension. NDS section 3.8.2 states, designs that induce tension perpendicular to grain shall be avoided whenever possible. When tension stress is perpendicular to grain cannot be avoided, mechanical reinforcement sufficient to resist all such stresses shall be considered. Furthermore, ASCE 7, section 12.11.2.2.3 states, nor shall wood ledgers or framing be used in cross-grain bending or cross-grain tension. I could not find any specification for the maximum height of the parapet in the structural drawings. I measured the ceiling height at about 10 feet, which matches the line 1 shear calculations. The truss is at about 5 feet deep and the maximum height of the wall at about 23 feet. Using the main force wind resisting system loads that were shown in the lateral analysis, which will almost be certainly lower than the component and cladding loads for this configuration, I get 1,116 pounds per stud at the tallest point of out-of-plane force at that location. Per my quick calculation this morning, a 2x6 Douglas fir stud at 16 inches on center for the parapet would be approximately 164% stressed under these loads. Therefore, the hem fir stud specified. Yes, sir.
This is Alejandro Angel. I apologize for interrupting you, but we have no way to verify your calculations here as we're meeting. So I think we get your point that you believe the design for the shear wall and the diaphragm is insufficient. Is that the main point?
Yes, that's the main point. And there are other deficiencies, I believe, as well, and so I think it warrants further investigation.
If I could just, is Investigator Correll. We did have an EAC on this case, and Mr. Vinton was invited to participate in that. He did decide not to participate. So the EAC members did conclude that this allegation was unsubstantiated.
I did notify the investigator that I was out of the state during that investigation.
Mr. Vinton, can you
say... Yeah, I see that on the report.
Yeah, I was going to suggest, Mr. Vinton, can you just summarize any other issues you have with this project? And were the details that Alejandro brought up just now, yeah, we can't substantiate any of that, but if you could summarize any other issues, then I want to let the respondent give him time to address.
Sure. So based on the hour and a half I spent this morning, for out-of-plane conditions, the attachment of the wall to the ledger is 204% stressed. The attachment of the ledger to the diaphragm is 221% stressed. In addition, there's a large awning in this area that puts additional load here. And then finally, in accordance with the IEBC section 503.7, the existing masonry walls need anchorage to the diaphragm. That's a requirement both for unreinforced and reinforced masonry walls in section 503.7 and section 503.9, and I could not find any details or information regarding the anchorage of those walls to the diaphragm.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Frost, do you want to present your position?
Sure. I stand by my letter that I wrote to the State Board on May 28th. And I stand by the EAC process that I went through and three PEs on the EAC agreed with my position and my calculations and drawings of which we provided. Mr. Vinton trespassed on the job site to obtain the few pieces of construction documents that he did get, but I would encourage him to look at what the EAC concluded and look over those notes if he if you still need some clarification as to why that happened, why that decision was made.
Okay. Any questions from the board?
Hi, this is Alejandro Angel. Mr. Frost, I did have a question for you, because I noted on Slayman's initial review of the case that you were using 70 pounds per square foot for the diaphragm for wood strength, and then you basically used that strength and carry it all the way through the design. Should that be, you know, a higher number? Shouldn't it, I mean, because I'll admit I'm not a structural engineer, but I am surprised by the last statement of the EAC as well, which says respondent noted that owners wanted to cut costs where they could, and therefore the shear wall was ultimately not up to code. So how was it that it was okay to have the wall not up to code?
I'll ask Mr. Slaveman. We had a live meeting just like this one, and after we discussed it, he agreed with me. There's probably a big portion of what Mr. Vinton is missing, and what we referred to in our meeting was the historic structures code, which has the requirements are relaxed a little bit for these issues we're talking about. That's what we talked about in our EAC committee meeting, and that's why Mr. Spaceman changed his mind.
Okay, so I just want to make sure I understand. You're saying that there's a either variances or a specific code for historic structures that allows lower strengths for some of those elements?
That's correct.
What code would that be?
That's the historic structures code.
I'm unaware of any code called the historic structures code. Are you referring to the International Existing Building Code?
International Existing Building Code, section 606.3. And
there is no section 606.3 in the 2018 code, and section 606 is for addition.
So this is all discussed in the committee meeting, Jacob, and I'm sorry you can't find it, but to the state board, I don't think it's fair that you allow him to make this in a whole new committee meeting. These things were already sorted out. They're already discussed thoroughly with the members of the EAC.
Aaron, did you sit in on that?
Yes, I did.
Do you recall the discussion?
I mean, if I...
Yes.
If I could be...
Mr. Frost, can we ask the investigator question, then we'll get back to you?
Okay.
Yes, so I did sit in on the EAC, and Mr. Frost reported that the owner and architect specifically told his team that they were not replacing the roof diaphragm, which made the load calculations correct. Mr. Slaveman and Mr. Natupski, as well as Mr. Campbell, both agreed with Mr. Frost's assessment. Also noting that they could not force the owner to get the shear wall up to code. Mr. Frost pointed out that without the shear wall up to code, they could not increase that load past that 70, and Mr. Slaveman agreed with that assessment.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Ms. Fleury. This is a complicated case because I mean, it's a serious issue having something that's below code, but noting that Slaveman had concerns with the issue and then attended the EAC and was, you know, came to terms with the design, I'm inclined to dismiss.
Okay.
Okay. Can I just add something?
Is that Mr. Frost?
Yes. I just want to put this in perspective that Mr. Vinton is not an innocent bystander. He's my competitor in a small town. He's a former employee that I had to fire at one time.
Yeah, we don't care.
I was one of his references for him to obtain his own license in Arizona. So knowing that should help you understand how he feels about me and my firm. I understand he has opinions about things, but you should know that this is the history behind us. We consider this harassment against my firm, against my license.
Well, Mr. Frost, I think we're looking at this in the technical merits. I understand that you guys may or may not have other issues behind this, but for this board, this is on the technical merits. And if I were you, I don't know why you're bringing that up, because we're already leaning towards dismissal.
Okay, I'll leave it alone.
But Dr. Angel, I would also be inclined to dismiss. It does sound like there's intelligent, professional people can take two approaches, but given the existing building code and the 50%, I know I've operated under that before, and no, it doesn't meet 2018 code, but a lot of things in old buildings don't. So I would be inclined to dismiss, considering this is a difference of professional opinion in my mind.
Is that a motion?
Yes, sir. That's a motion to dismiss.
Great. Thank you. Is there a second?
And I'll second.
Thank you, Dr.
I'll second.
All right. Let's vote. Dr. Alejandro Angel.
Aye.
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Clarence McAllister. He probably took off at 1 o'clock. Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you.
Okay.
I guess I want to attack the issues that we really want to get done this session. We have E, F, and G.
Do we have a quorum?
Yes, we do, Alejandro.
Are we at 6 people still?
Yeah, we still have a quorum. So we can go on to 6E.
It's going to take a while.
Is Mr. Takak here?
Mr. Chairman, just for this specific case, late Friday afternoon, I got an email. I saw it yesterday when I got in the office from Mr. Takach's attorney requesting that the board wait until a later date to review this due to his not being available. Mr. Takach let him know late Friday of the case being agendized. So he emailed me immediately and left a message late Friday afternoon requesting that the board postpone this so he could be in attendance because he's already at a court hearing. Okay. We informed him that we'd let you decide. We're not going to make a decision. Our feeling is that we can proceed just because he's out there practicing structural engineering. It's not supposed to be. But here's the email.
Can I add?
Dr. Angel.
Sorry, have we gotten any response from Mr. Takach to this allegations and why he's been feeling stuff after signing the consent agreement?
We were notified by the city of Phoenix of projects that he was engaging in and got some materials that you see in your packet. Notified Mr. Takach. Yeah. That we're going to put it back on the board because due to the language in the consent agreement that the stay of revocation would be lifted if he violates any of the terms of the order. And so
he's clearly violated the terms of the order based on the correspondence.
Understood, but did he comment on that? Did we ask him to provide a response to the allegation?
There is no allegation. It's that he failed to comply with the order.
Well, that's what it looks like, and I think the evidence is pretty strong, but I mean, somebody's claiming that he's signing plans after signing a consent agreement, don't we have to get a response from him? I mean, I think it is a an allegation.
I don't.
So let's move this to the next board.
Let Scott wants to talk.
Scott?
I think the chair is headed in the right direction with this. I think that due to the nature of lifting a stay of revocation, if it is a matter of payment of fines or something quantifiable in that nature, it may be able to be done rather quickly. But with something like this type of an allegation, it is much better to have representation by the party at the board meeting, if not moving it to a hearing. So certainly, at the very least, I would recommend the board push it to the next date for Mr. Takashi's attorney to be able to appear.
Mr. Chair, given our time constraints today, I move that we push this consideration to the next board meeting.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Kurt?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Clarence McAllister? Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. Can we move on to six?
No.
Yeah?
No, can we do G?
Yeah. Okay, let's go ahead and attack item 6G, please. Let's get there. Smouse
no, on the phone. Complaint.
On about the 26th of 2020, yeah. The board received a copy of a malpractice complaint filed against Allen and Philp Architects, B.C. This complaint and its enclosures were sent to the board by the law offices of Snell and Wilmer to satisfy requirements set forth in ARS 32-146. ARS 32-146 malpractice claim review states the following. On the filing of a complaint in any malpractice action, the plaintiff's attorney shall forward a copy of the complaint to the board and a report containing the information required in subsection B. Subsection B, the report required by subsection A shall contain the following information. Name and address of each defendant, name and address of each plaintiff, name and addresses of each registrant providing services to the plaintiff, a statement specifying the nature of the occurrence resulting in the malpractice action. The report required by subsection A is not discoverable and not admissible as evidence. On receipt of a report required by subsection A, the board shall initiate an investigation into the matter to determine if the registrant against whom the claim is filed is in violation of any provision of this chapter or any rule promulgated under this chapter. Upon initial
Mr. Chair, this is...
Sir?
I apologize, but Andy Everode, I have recused myself from this one.
We can't take it.
Okay.
All right. We have a quorum.
Correct.
No quorum.
Yeah. We'll have to move this.
Hey, Melissa, but is there an opportunity to, I mean, we can't take action, but can we direct staff to certain approach?
I was wondering that, Dr. Angel, because it does say we shall open an investigation. I'm not sure.
No.
That we have much choice.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Scott says no.
I withdraw my opinion.
Yeah, and
thank you for it, though.
With the conference, we can't discuss it. So let's move this on to next one.
But can I ask a question? Because I think the statute says that we shall open an investigation if we find any issues. And the board is asking, do we want to open a case?
Dr. Angel?
I don't think we even have a... Sorry. Go ahead, Scott.
Dr. Angel, I don't mean to break in, but as it's a matter for which there is no quorum, the agenda item can't be a matter before the board right now.
Got it.
Okay.
That
takes care of
6G.
Hey,
what's next?
6F. 6F1, there might be a
misunderstanding. I apologize. I would have spoken up earlier.
That's okay, Andy. That's okay. Thank you for speaking up anyway.
Do we
do D?
I want to just pass this on directly to Patty.
Me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, there might be this an individual for that.
Which one? F?
For F?
Right. F1. This has to do with Home Inspector Financial Assurance.
The law requires some inspectors maintain financial assurance, and if they fail to do so, they are first suspended and then they're revoked. Financial assurance is generally an E&O policy or a bond. The law does have some funky language that we brought to your attention in the past that says they can propose some other kind of... I can't even think. Can you remember the words, Deb? I might have to look it up. It says
the minimum net assets.
Yes. Excuse me. Is this the someone on the board or on the phone, Mr. Gatos?
Group of minimum assets.
That's it.
Yes, so Mark Gatos is here.
Okay.
Okay.
I just want to let everybody know that he was online.
Okay. So the third option is proof of assets. What you have to consider financial assurance when you look at E&O and you look at bonds. It is assurance into the future that if somebody files a claim, those assets will be there. So when we had brought this concern to you before, you had said you wanted to look at it on a case-by-case basis, because essentially what is that asset? What would qualify as a financial assurance going into the future? So we are bringing it to you. The individual has brought forward a financial statement. You have to determine whether or not that would meet the burden of the law for financial assurance.
Has the Home Inspectors Committee addressed this at all?
I think they came up with the same kind of, they came up, essentially we thought we had eliminated that language because we did strike it from the statute, but it turned out it appeared in two different parts of the statute. So the Home Inspector Committee had been eliminated. We did bring this back to them, and they're in the same quandary as the board, is what is that?
I'm not sure E&O is financial assurance. I don't think, because you have to prove negligence in order to get the money. A bond is more.
Let's not even look at E&O and bond. He's not providing either.
Oh, okay.
So he provided me with his financial statement. Does that provide the same type of protection as a bond?
My initial thoughts looking at it is. What prevents you from closing your bank account tomorrow
right.
as in, you know, going out of business?
Right. And I get that, but I'm worried because we're trying to interpret plain language from statute. Statute says he needs to provide proof that he has net assets of at least $25,000. Statute doesn't say that they have to be, you know, real estate or any other kind of net assets. We just need to know that he has net assets. And so, is it a good statute? No, but I don't know why we have to abide by it. And if we don't have a form for him to prove that, that's our responsibility, not his. So, I actually think we should allow him to show that he has net assets. I don't think what he provided gets me that. It shows he's got assets, but we're going to know what his debts are. So to find out net assets, we need to understand what his debt situation is. I would suggest if he provides what he provided or proof of some other assets, as well as a credit report where we can see all his debts, or some sort of form similar to what people use when they get a loan, that we should consider that as proof or evaluate that as proof.
So I just want to let you know that according to the statute, if he fails to provide financial assurance within 90 days, his certification is revoked and he's hitting that 90 days.
But he's not done a homeless.
I think we should make an exception, Patty, because that's on us. We haven't provided an avenue that's in statute.
You know
what I'm saying? I know it's bad, but it's not because of him.
Are you pending? He's suspended right now. Are you pending the revocation? I guess we just need direction on how you want to proceed.
I would pend any action on his license until we, you know, if we give him direction on what he needs to provide, and then, you know, give him 30 days to provide it or something along those lines.
Next board. Has he indicated that he wants to continue to practice?
I guess we can ask him. He's on.
Hi, this is Mark. I just put my license on hold. I forget the terminology you use for that. And I know you can do that up to 5 years. And then at that point is when I was asked to provide, you know, the financial assurance. So I'm not giving up my license. I just
you know, suspending it for, you know, temporarily, what have you. And I've already applied for that and been approved for that. It's just a matter of the finance.
Okay, so he's currently suspended.
Right. So he's not planning on practicing right now anyway. He's currently suspended.
Yeah, inactive was the word I wanted to use. I'm sorry.
Well, I think Dr. Angel reads up a very good point. If we don't have any definition by the board as to what qualifies as assets, he's in effect, seems like he's done what he's board's hiring.
That's why we're bringing it to you. As you said, you wanted to look at it on a case-by-case basis.
Patty, so I would make a motion the way I sort of explained it, but you know, if anybody has other thoughts, I'm happy to hear them. Is that we request that Mr. Ados provides a credit report to evaluate his debt, and then we combine that with his assets to establish net assets, and we give him 30 days from today's board meeting to provide the information. In the meantime, his license would not be suspended or would not be revoked if he stayed, the revocation would be stayed.
Okay. Mr. Gatehouse, is that clear to you?
That a motion now to handle?
Mm-hmm. I'm making it as a motion, yes. Say the revocation, give him 3 days to provide the schedule of his debts, comprehensive schedule of debts, so we can evaluate net assets.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Kirk, could you do the vote, please?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gillmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Motion carried.
The only caveat to that is this Mark again, is I just want to make sure that I will understand specifically what's requested. I'm sure I can provide whatever means that you need. I just want to make sure that I am in understanding what exactly you need.
So let me try to explain. I mean, we need to make sure that you have a net positive of $25,000.
So I got you. I'm good with
that. You provided proof of your assets. We need your liabilities. So, you know, if you have a home mortgage, if you have a business loan, all those things we need to understand so that we can establish that the net is a positive $25,000 or more.
Yeah, I understand completely. And if the credit report will do that, that's fine. I just want to make sure that, you know, I provide you, you know, I would assume that I would get a list of here, I need this or that. And I just want to make sure that I get that and I understand so I can provide you what you need.
And Patty and Melissa, maybe this is something we want to bring back to the Home Inspectors Committee to see if they have a more permanent solution for it.
We've actually talked to them, and what it would require is a statutory change to remove the tail end of Section 2 of the statute. So until and when we get a sponsor to do that, we're stuck with the language. But certainly what the board did today provides us as staff with some guidance for how to proceed in cases like this in the future. And on a case-by-case basis, we may end up having to bring individual matters before you for your determination in the future.
Okay. Thank you. Mr.
Gato? So one last thing. I just want to be sure. Am I going to receive some sort of an email or some other kind of letter?
Yes.
Asking that. Okay. I just want to be clear. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good. I want to make sure. Get Greg's here. I want to do Patty.
Yes.
What do you want to do first?
Do you want to do the licensing matters and then?
We've got 10 minutes. We've got 10 minutes.
7, 8. The
two. No, Alejandro can stay until 2.
Oh.
And Andy and Carmen as well.
Melissa promised me cake if I stay till 2.
Wait, I didn't get cake.
Alejandro is very good at storytelling.
Who the hell knows?
Okay, let's move on to 7A and B. We were just granting licensure from the universal application. Anybody have concerns about 7A and B?
Alejandro.
Well, Mr. Chair, I move that we consent and approve 7A and B under a universal licensure.
Okay.
Second.
Yeah. First and a second. Kurt?
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Sorry, I thought I said aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, thank you. 7C, Mr. George Cox has requested a 6-month extension. Staff is recommending only a 2-month extension.
At the most.
Okay.
If that.
Can you share some background?
Yeah, Mr. Hawks was, he applied for, just for the exams, we gave him authorization until November 25th of 2020, and he wants a 6-month extension, but he hasn't even tried to take an exam before March. So before COVID, he didn't even try to sit, and then he hasn't tried to sit for one since. He still has 2 more months left, but so I can see us giving him 2 months when the testing centers were closed, but the 6-month extension sounds excessive. He's had the ability.
So if he misses a 2-month and he decides he doesn't do the testing, what's next? He just reapplies?
He has to reapply.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm inclined to do the 2-month extension if for some reason NCARB isn't doing remote proctoring or is needed as a health reason to not go in, we could always consider another extension. But he didn't give that in his list of reasons.
Correct.
Neil, second?
I agree. Yeah, I second. I
okay.
agree.
Thank 100%. You, Neil. I knew you were seconding.
Yeah. Neil, vote please. Neil, sorry. <Yeah. laughs> Kurt, please.
Okay, Dr. Alejandro Angel.
He says yes.
Aye. That was on purpose. No, that was
Jack Gilmore.
Aye.
Neil Jones.
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff.
Aye.
Stephen Knoll.
Aye.
Andrew Everode.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Should we deal with Mr.
That's certainly up to you. If you want to do an executive session now, we can. Actually, I don't think there are any other people on.
There's one.
Is there one? Who else is waiting to speak?
Gary Lashman requested that we look at 9F, which is the public comment, whether a conflict exists between the Boards Practice Act and the Arizona Department of Transportation Record Drawing Guidelines.
Okay.
Is Mr. Lashman on the phone?
What was this in the agenda?
F, 9F.
Oh.
We could, since he doesn't seem to be responding, postpone this and put it back on the October meeting agenda.
Yeah, let's do that.
Melissa, I think one, has Aiden had an opportunity to look at this?
No, that's a good point, Alejandro. So let's do that.
And I think we should have Aiden react to it. And for Mr. Lashem, if I can say, he cited several statutes and substantive policies that I don't think are related to the record drawing. But I'd like a little bit more specificity on what the issues are.
Okay.
Okay. So let's postpone this till next month.
Okay. And then it's certainly up to you to determine what next from the agenda you'd like to take up. If you'd like the executive session, clearly Mr. Harris is here. If you feel the need to take up another matter prior to that, that's also fine. I mean, we can certainly push the cancellation of registrations to October. As well as election of officers, discussion of any possible holiday celebration. The supplemental proposed rulemaking, we can probably also wait to do.
We used to push it to GURK is all we're trying to do.
Yeah, and then the only other thing would be to recognize Ms. Pritzel and Mr. Montgomery for their contributions to the board.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Well,
don't leave.
Greg is here. I think we should take advantage of his being here. So I'd like to make a motion to go into executive session and have a chat with Mr. Harris.
Okay. And
second.
Thank you.
Can we do it right here?
Yeah, we can. I think so. As long as...
Can you tell that there's nobody on that?
Well, there's other individuals like Tina and those groups that are still listening to, and they're just not here to talk.
Let them leave.
Yeah. I like that, Stephen.
Okay, we're going to have to call in.
All right, let's go into executive session, and anyone else on the board or on the phone can hold on. And we'll be
That's what we do need a vote.
Yeah. We have a motion to go into executive in a second. Kirk, can you do a vote, please? Okay.
Dr. Alejandro Angel?
Aye.
Jack Gilmore?
Aye.
Neil Jones?
Aye.
Carmen Wyckoff?
Aye.
Stephen Knoll?
Aye.
Andrew Everode?
Aye.
Motion carried. And 1:30 p.m.
Same number as earlier, everyone.
Three of our members, so we are going to lose quorum, so I think we're ready to adjourn. Some of these missing items will be moved to our next month meeting on the 27th, 9:30.
Nine o'clock. Right. Thank you all very much for your continued participation, dedication, and all your help. Be safe until next month.
Patty.
Thank you.
Just nothing?
Thank you.
You're happy to,
All right.
Email her.
I'm going to stop the recording now that we have now adjourned.
Yeah.
Now that we've adjourned, I'm going to say we shouldn't.